listening to the Cosmopolitan Hour.
Hey, I'm somebody from the room. See the room 100 times, and you're listening Cosmopolitan Hour. Whatever you're listening, to listen well, okay? I'm Tommy Wiseau. Have a groovy time. Bye.
Chinese beer in bottles.
Oh yeah, which one? Tsingtao?
Yeah. They also have Prohibition Speakeasy, which is pretty good. And Lagunitas Carry Eyeball. But like I got one of those, like I signed up for all those travel emails and stuff. You know, on the other day, round trip, including taxes, to Seoul. $700.
Out of San Francisco?
Yeah.
Nice.
I know. I was like, holy shit. Like, that's...
What airline was it?
I don't remember. But...
I had a layover. I've become quite the semi-expert in Asian airlines after living in Hong Kong for 2 years. And I flew on Asiana, which is a Korean airline.
Okay.
And their ads are a little ridiculous, like in some of their promotional, like maybe on their website or their literature or whatever. It talks about how their stewardesses, because, you know, it's an Asian airline, so they don't have any male stewards yet. They still kind of... unfortunately fall into that stereotype of like geisha like service,
right?
You know, it is my pleasure to serve you. I just spit all over you because I'm a uncouth big nosed western woman.
Yeah, god, why can't you
I'm
more
not
like
a geisha
like airline steward.
Yes, but anyway, in this Asiana promo material, there was a photo of the flight attendants in first class, like, literally performing a song for one of the passengers. Like, one of them had a flute, and one of them had, like, a little guitar, and they were, like, performing on the plane.
That would be the most embarrassing thing that I could think of. Like, that's
pretty
just...
much.
Oh,
God, that said, awful. However, I was extremely impressed with my Asiana experience.
Yeah,
despite a six-hour layover in Seoul, I had a great experience. And my primary reason for giving them high rankings is that there was crazy turbulence, and the captain did a really good job of keeping the plane on the level, which is all it takes to impress me, apparently.
That's nice. Yeah, I don't know. This is
episode 60, by the way.
Yes.
And we have reclaimed our righteous seat.
In the lady psychiatrist's booth?
Yes.
Yes, at Vesuvio.
Yes.
Yes.
Continue.
That's okay. Mike and I both felt really bad, but we were... I can't remember what we were doing. We were walking around somewhere, and Mike was like, you know, I bet you that flights to Japan were really cheap right now. And I was like, yeah. He's like, it'd be awesome to go to Japan. I'm like, yeah. It sucks that, you know, sucks everything that happened.
Yeah. Although, you know, give them a few more months, they'll be thrilled to have you over.
Well, that's kind of what we were thinking. We're like, you know, if we were able to book some kind of thing now, and then
totally.
Hopefully, you know, I guess it would be putting money into the economy, which is
totally, yeah,
good. I mean, we don't want to be like taking advantage of their tragedy, but at the same time, we're like,
yeah, but
nobody
if you
else
think
wants
about,
to go to Japan, and they're going to give us cheap airfare, then we're happy
exactly.
to go.
I mean, think about all the other places where disasters have happened, and, you know, Japan is arguably one of the wealthiest countries.
Absolutely.
You know, in the world, but also one of the wealthiest countries, if not the wealthiest country, to have an enormous disaster on the scale in recent years. So
yeah, and they definitely have a much bigger capacity to deal with it.
Yeah, and I mean, so many, you know, even for these smaller, lesser developed countries that go through these disasters, you know, they always say one of the best things you can do after giving money is travel there and,
right.
you know, meet the people and stimulate the local economy up close and personal. So I don't think it would be in poor taste at all.
Okay,
and
well,
I
that's
think...
good, because we felt a little bad when we,
no.
we were talking about it, because we're just kind of like, yeah, that crazy disaster that killed thousands of people and means cheap airlines for us.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I had very similar thoughts after the Icelandic economic crash. I was like, ooh, I've always wanted to go to Iceland.
Yeah.
But then I decided not to because, A, I had no money at the time, even if I wanted to, and B, I realized that with their economic crash, their one vegetarian restaurant in Reykjavik was likely closed, and the country as a whole probably didn't have the credit to buy fresh fruits and vegetables, so I would likely starve to death in Iceland.
That's entirely possible.
You know, there's no way I'm eating fermented shark. and or I'm fermented sorry. Pickled sheep's head.
Right.
That's just not happening.
I shouldn't laugh. I mean, there's many parts of Canada where that kind of stuff is very normal.
Did I mention the shark is fermented with urine?
Oh, no. Okay, that's
different.
There
you go. Yeah.
As urine fermented shark. That's a whole other kettle of fish.
Scandinavians are a dad joke.
Dad joke.
Ah, dear. Us Scandinavians are a wily and inventive bunch.
No kidding.
We're faced with hardships and we just piss on it. So I have to confess that you've made me into a badass, because before last week, when you so generously gave me this gift, I had never owned a real or imitation leather jacket. And now I am the owner of a real badass style leather jacket. Wow. Not just any jacket that happens to be made of leather, or, well, in this case, fake leather, but an actual, like,
biker
leather
jacket
style jacket with the zippers, and I feel kind of badass.
I'm happy to give it to you, but I was sad that it didn't fit me.
You'll find your jacket someday, Jordan.
God, one of these days. I don't know. Somebody's talking about you. Yes, I've been trying to find a leather biker jacket for, like, years now. And I found some that are, like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the one that I have right now is more like a modern-style biker jacket with, like, the collar that comes up, and, like, not the Ramon-style biker jacket, which is what I want. And apparently I either have to pay almost $200 to get one from Vegan Essentials in a men's extra small, which will probably be about the same size as the one that I gave.
Yeah.
So too big.
It'll probably fit me.
Or I can order one from Japan.
Oh, hey.
So,
or you can just hold off until you go there in a few months.
That's true. Oh my God. I mean, this is something that kind of mystifies me. So I'm like, it's a fairly basic, classic item of clothing, you know? And like,
classic enough that there should be plenty of cheap knockoffs in imitation leather.
And the thing is, I found some cheap knockoffs and things, but they all have these, like, you know, they've, like, tried to update it or, like, make it feminine, or they've given it, like, innovative design details.
Right.
So, like,
right.
they have, like, a hood attached to it, and I'm just like, fuck that. Or they make it, like, really small, so like it's supposed to fit really small and like really short, and I'm like, yeah, that's fine, I guess, but like, if you want to wear this thing like an actual jacket, it needs to be a little bit bigger so that it can fit over, you know, clothes and zip up
and actually keep you warm,
right? Or they've done like all these kind of things where they put on like studs and stuff like that, and it's just really annoying and looks stupid, like fashion punk kind of stuff. That just I can't really deal with that either, because then you can't. And the worst thing is, like, leather, fake leather, like, it's hard to work with, you know? Like, I couldn't have taken that jacket to you and said, like, hey, can you make this fit me?
Yeah.
Because you might have tried. But you probably would have cursed my name.
Totally. I would have said no, but
But
I can make a bikini out of it.
Yeah.
I can cut it up.
You could make, like,
Little wristbands.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Indeed.
So everything out there that's available is either really ugly or not what I'm looking for, or really expensive.
And I think we should make it clear to our listeners that you have already searched every possible vegan outlet. You've exhausted every possibility in the vegan world.
Vegan Essentials.
Yes.
Like I said. Vegetarian Shoes, they do have a women's size biker jacket.
Mm-hmm.
It would cost me probably close to $150, which I will pay if there's nothing else.
Yeah.
But
it's a big risk online, too.
It is kind of. And
as I learned today.
Yeah, and because I know that Vegetarian Shoes has a really good reputation for, like, long-lasting, good quality stuff. But, you know, a jacket is something that you wear pretty much every day. And, you know, like, the one that I have right now, the fake leather jacket that I have right now, it's, like, wearing out. And I've had it.
Although it's wearing out in a very cool way. It could
sort of. It's less cool, like, around the collar, which is why I've taken to wearing a jean vest over it, because it's just, like, all this, like, and then, you know, slowly it's starting to come apart.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the hazard with fake leather. But, But yeah, I don't really want to pay $150 for I'm only going to get 6 months of use out of it. I want this thing to be like, you know.
Well, if their shoes are well known for you know, being sturdy and withstanding the test of time, I would think the jacket, I mean, because shoes are also something you wear.
Yeah.
And I mean, some people, like my partner, wear one pair of shoes every day until they wear out.
Yeah. But I mean, I do. I'm not a snappy dresser. I'm happy to say.
I think you have a distinct style, and I like it.
Well, thank you. However, oh my God, this is my. I've had a few fashion crises this week, so I guess I can talk about them.
Yes, let's get into your fashion crisis.
So the first one, I think I posted on like Twitter a couple of times because I was annoyed about a few various things. So I recently started, like, getting into riding my bike. Like, you know, I've been riding it to work whenever I can. I've had a bit of a dry spell because it's been, ironically, rainy. And it took me too long to bother to get rain gear. But now it's nice
again.
That's
a very Bay Area of you, yeah. By the way, is, oh, you know, it'll stop raining next week. I'll get a raincoat later. And then, you know, you basically just get soaked and then never buy any rain gear and always promise you will. And then it gets sunny and you forget about it.
That's pretty much what's going to happen because right now it's sunny. And so I rode my bike.
You're a real San Franciscan now.
Yeah, I know. And we'll talk about this later, but I'm also a real legal resident in the United States now. So I have a whole rant on people who say shit about immigrants and illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
But
now you can come out and be loud and proud.
Yeah, no kidding. And
I can't touch you now.
Yeah. Right. But anyway, so I've been getting into riding my bike, and I want to train to ride the 100-mile ride for the farm sanctuary. And you know,
that's the century up in Oregon.
Yes.
That Josh Hooten from Herbivore and our awesome friend Megan did with a bunch of other awesome people.
Yes. And I would like to join them next year, even though I am not a very experienced cyclist. But I think I'll be able to pull it off.
I think so.
I've been, like, part of what I've been looking at is I've been looking for a lot of cycling blogs and, like, training diaries and things like that of people who have done this. And so it seems like, you know, really all you need to train for a century is about 3 months, like, if you stick to it and are fairly dedicated.
I admire your gumption. When Megan did it, the thought crossed my mind, like, maybe I'll join her next year, and I just haven't done anything.
Well,
like,
I haven't really either. You have time.
But given the opportunity to ride my bike, I will lazily decline and either walk or, like, take my car or something.
Yeah, well,
really bad, like,
you having a car, I mean, for me, my bike is my car.
Yeah,
my bike is
exactly.
Generally the lazier option. Like, I mean, I guess I could take the bus, but the bus takes way longer than riding my bike, like, to work.
Yeah, totally.
And I can walk, but walking takes way longer.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess if it's raining or something like that, I'm still not that comfortable riding in the rain. But but anyway, so I've been looking online for, like, bike blogs and specifically, like, women's bike blogs and stuff like that. And I've come up with some really great stuff, but holy shit, like, when I was Googling, like, I'd type, like, women's cycling blog or something, and I would get something that would have a really promising name, like, you know, Girl Bikes in the City or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'd click on it, and it would just be like one of those, it was basically a fashion blog, but the girl was, like, had her bike in the frame. You know? And then there was one that was even worse. It was like, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it was this woman who basically took pictures of, like, fashionably dressed cyclists. So, like, it seemed like she rode her bike and everything, and, like, she went to cycling-centric events and everything, but the only thing that she documented was what people were wearing.
Huh.
And it was kind of like the Vice magazine, like,
right.
You know, it was, she didn't have don'ts, but it was all just, like, you know, pictures with, like, little write-ups, like, you know, this works because, and I was just so, I was so annoyed, and I'm like, I guess that there's room for all that stuff, and I guess if that's what somebody is interested in, then that's okay. But it's so frustrating to try and find stuff about, like, women who actually really ride and who are, like, training and who are
doing stuff, and it's just, there's such a glut right now of like these fashion blogs dressed up as every other kind of blog. And so like that brought me to another thing that annoyed the hell out of me, which was when I was looking, I was updating my Twitter stuff, and I was following some new people and jettisoning some other feeds that I never really looked at or was never very interested in. And I came across this one feed from a person who was like a gardener. And, you know, the Twitter feed seemed kind of like, you know, I'm a punk rock garden person, like DIY and everything. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So I go and check out her blog, and the first post there is a post about Iron Fist shoes, which is like a punk rock. You should be able to hear the air quotes. punk rock, like, women's clothing.
Okay.
Website or whatever. And they, and like, she had these shoes, like high-heeled stiletto shoes with like skulls printed on them or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Hideous. No, it was just a post about the shoes.
Okay. Hmm.
And I was just kind of like, well, you know, that's fine. And like, I poked around on the site more, and there was a lot of really good information on there. But I mean, the only reason that I gave it another look is because I was so pissed off the first time that I like immediately closed it and was like, what the fuck is this shit on my Twitter thing? And then I was like, okay, well maybe, you know, that's not fair. So I went back and looked. I'm like, there's a lot of good stuff, but I just, it drives me so crazy how, I mean, for one, it drives me really crazy that like punk rock is such a commodified thing nowadays, how it's like so marketed to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such an old, tired company. Yeah. But
go rage against Hot Topic.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like now it's like this super fashionable thing, and it's, you know, you've got all these sites that are like punk rock clothing websites and all this stuff popping up, and I don't know, and it kind of invades everything, like everything that has anything to do with punk rock. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's probably all about cross promoting and like marketing, and like bloggers get free stuff, and so they have to write about it to feel like, but I don't know, I just think it's, you know, it's just really disappointing, especially since, like, you know, the people that I look up to, like, my real punk rock heroes are, like, would never write about Iron Fist shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that I think that that one post or however many fashion posts that person did, like, just devalues everything that they've done, but it really, like, it turned me off big time, and it's really sad that, like, there aren't, I mean, maybe I'm too old, but there just aren't, I don't have the same kind of like punk rock role models that I used to. Like, I remember when I was a kid, there used to be zinesters and stuff that, who you'd look up to, and you'd be like, oh man, that person's so cool. Like, I remember Janelle, who did the Tales of Blarg comic scene, was, you know, I looked up to her a lot when I was younger, and like, she's still doing stuff, and she's still awesome. I actually know her now, but, you know, there are always those people who are really doing stuff, and like, you know, girls who played in bands and toured with bands, and like, who were like promoters and actually did stuff. And now I just feel like there must be girls like that out there, but I guess they're maybe getting drowned out by all the people who are more interested in self-promoting and taking pretty pictures of themselves than doing anything. And that's really sad. Like, I wonder how it feels to be like a 15-year-old punk rock woman today.
Yeah, I feel like right now we're kind of at one of those awkward overlaps where, I mean, they say that nothing in history is new, but, you know, I beg to differ. I think there are new and exciting things that come along every once in a while, and, you know, the original concept of punk rock in the 70s was definitely one of those things. It was, you know, and it's just, it's been around for a while. It's definitely been commercially exploited and commodified and kind of watered down and totemized to a point where the real meaning behind it and the real, you know, the most important thing, which was the shock value, that's totally gone out the window, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I think it was Jelly Biafra that said, like, you know, you used to see, like, in the 70s, you'd see a kid with, like, a foot-high purple mohawk and be, like, fucking shocked as shit.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you see that kid with a foot-high purple mohawk, and you wonder how long it took him to do his hair in the morning.
Right. And what salon he's going to, and how much he paid for that.
What hair dye he got. Did he get it at Sally or Hot Topic?
And, right.
So, and I feel that, you know, they're similar. It's similar for, like, sub-movements, you know, like, there's, you know, maybe the punk movement kind of lost steam or lost its shock value, or that, you know, it's freshness over, you know, 30-plus years, but then there were little tiny movements within that, you know, like, there was Riot Girl, there were zines,
right.
There were, you know, things like that, that, you know, kind of, in their own way, you know, I mean, those are just two things from the 90s that I'm quoting, because, you know, that's just what I'm familiar with, but I feel like we're kind of in this weird overlap where we're waiting for the next thing to happen, and we're waiting for, you know, whoever that visionary person to create it is going to be. But
yeah, I think that our, like, our environment nowadays is just way more hostile to that kind of stuff.
And it is.
It's kind of, it's weird because it's hostile because it's so receptive.
Exactly.
You can't do anything to shock anybody.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
you can't generate. You can't shock people into changing or anything like that. I mean, I don't know. It's a sad thing, I guess. And it's a, like, I remember hearing my very first Dead Kennedys song when I was fairly young. And I remember that it was really shocking to listen to, like, especially as somebody who's, like, a band geek and, like, somebody who, you know, I grew up listening to.
Do you remember what the first Dead Kennedys song was that you heard?
It was, I can't remember the name of it. it was, I remember most of the words. it's more about the garden, something.
The garden? The one about the fire? Forest fire?
No, not that one. I totally can't remember.
That one makes me laugh, like, a lot. Like, some Dead Kennedys songs make me laugh specifically because they're about the Bay Area.
Yes, one has always made me laugh, even before I was familiar with the...
Yeah, with the Berkeley Hills.
Yes, but the...
Was it because he's eating weird berries in the woods and tripping out?
No,
that always cracked me up.
The thing that always killed me about that song was at the very end where he says gerbil instead of gerbil. He's talking about the gerbil running through the woods, and then he says, see the gerbil run. That always kind of cracked me up. But I'll have to like look up what song it was.
Yeah.
But I remember just like, I remember it was... It was really shocking, and like it made a huge impression on me, and it made me instantly want to go out to the record store and be like, get me more like this.
I want all their albums.
Yeah. And like, you know, I remember when I was a teenager too, like there was a punk rock record store in my town, and I was very lucky that we were just barely a big enough place to to support that, and like we had some punk bands in Edmonton and stuff, but like, this place was literally a little hole in the wall. Uh-huh. Like, it was this tiny little basement suite that I'm pretty sure used to be, like, a utility closet in this, like, in this larger kind of retail building. And you would go down there, and it was just, you know, like, a couple kind of handmade display things.
Right.
Punk rock records. And, like, the surliest dude in the entire world standing behind the counter.
They always are, man. What the hell?
And, like, it was, you know, on the one hand, I'm kind of like, what the hell, man? Like, you should have been more friendly and you should have, like, recommended good stuff to me. But at the same time, it was kind of like, I can sort of appreciate that dickhead attitude because, you know, if you're not willing to suffer, like, one dickhead for your
totally,
punk rock,
yeah.
then maybe you just don't deserve to have it anyway.
True enough.
So, and that, you know, like, that was psyching myself up to go down there and ask that guy at the counter, like, what I should get was, you know, it's a fairly defining moment, I think, in my teenage years.
I think that's probably a defining moment I was too afraid of, which is why I didn't get into comic books until I was into my 20s. Which was ridiculous, because the comic books lady in my town, we didn't have a comic book guy in my hometown, we had a comic book lady who was amazing.
Well,
like, she was the
hugest
nerd.
She would have to be.
Yeah. Like, she had, you know, like, a short boyish haircut, like, total, you know, neglected, like, lady mustache and, like, thick Coke bottle glasses and, you know, spoke with a lisp. Like, you could tell she was, like, the super nerd from high school that grew up to open the comic book shop. And she was really sweet. And, you know, once I got into comics and I would come into her shop and, like, talk to her and stuff, and she was so nice, and I felt so embarrassed for being too intimidated to go in before when I was a teenager. Or, you know, ask her. Like, I went in once when I was a teenager, and I had no idea what to buy, so I just ended up buying, like, two really stupid action comics with, you know, like, the chicks with big boobs and everything, and, you know, like, just totally not up my alley when, you know, I could have gone in there and had a simple conversation and gotten over myself, and, you know, I could have been in my teens and really into, like, Daniel Clowes. Like, I can't imagine how much that would have blown my mind at 16. Yeah. Like, it blew my mind at 22.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's definitely, I definitely admire. But I think, in a way, you know, I probably didn't access that stuff as much because of, you know, kind of paradoxically what you said about how it's being destroyed not because people aren't receptive, but because they're too receptive.
Right.
Because I grew up in the Bay Area where there's so much, you know, you'd think that I would have more exposure to, like, punk rock because so much of it comes from this area and it's such a progressive, receptive area to that kind of thing. And, I mean, there were punk shows in my own town, like at the theater downtown. And, you know, but I didn't get into it for the longest time. I think partially just because I was, like, a scared kid, and I was, like, too afraid to, like, find that stuff out, but also because it was just part of the background, you know, and, like, for me, like, I grew up, you know, like, one of my classmates in first grade was, like, her dad was in the Grateful Dead, and, like, like, I grew up with people whose parents grew weed in their closets and stuff like that, so, like, for me, even though I really ended up liking punk rock and really getting into it, like, it wasn't,
I guess something that you were drawn to seek out earlier on in your life.
It didn't appeal to me because it wasn't as underground as it probably was in Edmonton in the 90s. You know, it wasn't as, I can imagine in Edmonton it probably would have been a really strong statement to be like, yeah, I listen to Dead Kennedys, I'm into punk rock, and it would have been like a really clear and obvious, like, rebellion and counterculture, whereas when I was growing up because we were growing up, you know, we're the same age, but you know, it probably, you know, there were kids I went to school with whose parents probably listened to Dead Kennedy, so it probably didn't seem that rebellious to listen to them, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean,
that's the problem of kids like me who grow up. I mean, my parents are as square as they come, trust me, but in general, generally speaking, I grew up in a community of total hippie parents and punk rock parents and, like, pot-smoking parents.
Right.
So when you grow up in that environment, like, what do you have to rebel against?
Right.
So that's kind of my background versus yours.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, and, you know, I kind of have the exact opposite experience because my parents were very cool and, like, very, you know, my dad was, like, a major, like, acid head, like, back in the 70s and played in bands and was, like, a music writer.
What did your dad play?
He's a drummer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he played guitar when I was growing up. Like, he picked up guitar and took lessons and everything when I was, like, younger. And he never really stuck with anything. Like, it's funny. Like, my mom was a violinist. And,
wow.
I've always wondered, like, which of them I got the
musical gene.
Like, I mean, I'm sure I got some of it from both. But, like, I'm sure that one of them is probably, like, more genetically predisposed than the other. And I'm never sure which one it is. Because, like, all three of their kids turned out to be very musical.
Yeah. You should start a band, like the Bradys.
My sister Brady and brother Bunch. Were in a band together.
Or the Partridge Family.
Yeah.
Well, they should have invited you. What the hell? Why didn't they invite you?
No, I wouldn't have wanted to be in that band. I mean, their band was actually, it was great. They were a really, really, really good band.
Now, your sister plays drums, right?
She has her, she went to a community college and got, like, a diploma in drum performance.
Oh, cool.
She also plays piano, and that's what she played primarily in the band.
And what does your brother play?
He plays saxophone, but he also sings.
Okay.
which was a shock to everybody in the family.
Alto or tenor saxophone?
He actually played, in high school he played baritone saxophone.
Oh.
I think that the one that he has now is an alto.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. So I grew up with like very progressive parents, especially given where I was living. That like the rest of the community was really not progressive. I mean, I went to a high school with 1,800 kids, and there were maybe 20 punk rockers. In the high school. Like maybe.
Well, that's where you get, you know, maybe that's where you got the itch to first look for something else, you know?
Well, maybe. I mean,
it's from your parents. Maybe that's where you got that initial bit of courage to kind of go into the punk store and ask for Dead Kennedys LP, whereas I would have just sat at home moping by myself and going, ooh, they'll be mean to me. They'll think I'm a nerd.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I think the thing that probably did it for me is that I was bullied and teased really, really badly when I was a kid, like so badly that I had to leave my school twice, and it really sucked. Like, it was really horrible.
Now that you can travel again, you should go back with a gun.
Well, you know,
take
care
of some business.
I've actually gotten
TCOB Jordan.
I've actually gotten emails and things from people that I used to know saying that they were really sorry about how they treated me.
Do you, like, print them out and keep them in an album? And,
no,
like,
I don't really give a shit. I mean, like, you know, one of the girls that was really mean to me in elementary school, like, last I heard, was working at a gas station. I'm like, I mean, I just don't care. Like, I mean, they were 9 years old and they treated me shitty. And it's like, I just don't give a shit. Like, I'm sure you're boring people now and I'm sure that you feel sorry and everything, but it's fine. Like, that was a big deal and me becoming who I became is that I got shit on a lot when I was a kid, and like my defining year was when I was 11, and this was my, you know, I'd been at that point, I was just starting junior high school. In Canada, you do elementary school from kindergarten to grade 6, and then you go to junior high from grade 7 to 9, and then high school from grade 10 to 12. And you know, throughout elementary school, I got teased and bullied just, like, really badly.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, moved around from schools and stuff like that. And the one thing that I had that was really good in my life was I had my best friend who lived, like, a couple blocks away from me. We'd been friends literally since, like, I was born. She was, she was about a year older than me, and, like, our parents had been friends. So, you know, we knew each other from a very, very early age.
You had an automatic in.
Pretty much.
You're like, hey mom, can you introduce me?
Yeah. But we were really close, and we lived really close together, and so we hung out a lot, and it kind of just made like the school stuff, it made it a little easier to deal with, because I was like, you know, I didn't really matter if everybody was an asshole to me at school, because then I had my friend outside of school.
Yeah.
So when I turned 11 and when I went to grade 7, three things happened within 1 week. My best friend moved 3 hours away to a farm outside of Calgary.
Oh my God. So she basically died.
Pretty much. I mean, this was before the internet, like long distance phone charges were really expensive.
Oh,
like,
man.
I wasn't allowed to talk to her that often because seriously, I could easily rack up like $500 in long distance charges. So the other thing that happened was my parents divorced.
Oh, man.
And then the last thing that happened is I broke my foot. And
oh, man.
So this happened, like, and the chronology was, you know, my best friend moved away, like, basically, like, the week before grade 7 started.
Oh, my God.
And then I broke my ankle 3 days before it started. But my parents, who were, like, you know, I didn't know it then, pretty preoccupied with you know,
splitting up.
They didn't believe that anything was wrong with my foot.
No,
so I didn't get taken to the hospital for a couple days.
Oh my God.
and then when I got taken to the hospital, they were like, yep, it's broken. It's too swollen right now for us to do anything with. So we're going to pump you full of anti-inflammatories
and you have to like go home and basically lie down with your foot up for a day and then come back and we'll put a cast on. So the very first day of junior high, I went to the hospital and got my cast put on. So I was like on crutches with like a wet cast on my very first day of junior high school.
Oh man.
And then like the second day of junior high school, I came home and I found like a bookshelf tipped over and like all this shit had been like thrown all over the place. And my mom was like, your dad left.
Oh my God.
Well, she basically chased him out of the house.
Good for her.
So that was like, that was pretty much the bottom.
Best week ever. Yeah.
But I mean, that, like, it was horrible. It was,
yeah.
It was, it sucked. And like, you know, the years following that really sucked. And like, my mom lost it for a little while. And I had to do a lot of, I had to do a lot of the work, like looking after my brother and sister.
Jeez.
But I mean, the thing that that did is like, I mean, after that, I was just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
There's like, nothing, nothing is really going to get that much worse. Than that.
Yeah, like nothing these bullies can say are gonna.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, by
that
the time
doesn't mean shit.
By the time I got to junior high, I dropped off their radar. I was so far beneath them that nobody gave a shit about me at all. So I was just.
Well, there's some relief.
I was basically a non-person, and that was, I mean, that was a bit of a relief. But I mean, the whole thing was like when, you know, then like a few years later when I started to get into punk rock and stuff like that. I mean, I did get. And I still do get intimidated by people, but the, you know, the thought of some, like, asshole at the punk rock record store thinking that I was an idiot, it just didn't matter that much to me because I was just kind of like, well, everybody thinks I'm, a, like, an ugly, stupid idiot, and who cares?
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, just on top of everything else. I think it turned me into, like, a little bit of a nihilist just for a little while, and that, like, allowed me to get my foot in the door.
That's pretty deep,
and then
man.
Punk rock was one of those things that, like, allowed me to kind of get over it and, like, find positive things. Which, I mean... And I hope that doesn't sound totally, like, self-pitying or whatever.
No,
but it was
not
just,
at all.
In a way, I was kind of lucky, because a lot of people don't have that kind of massive ass-kicking experience early on in their life.
Totally.
And I think that that makes them a lot more fearful of a lot of things.
True. It's true.
So.
I think I got some of that ass-kicking, but I think because of my genetics, I definitely felt the fear of the judgmental shopkeeper more than you did. So I was probably a lot more self-conscious than I should have been, rightly, to go in and get, like, you know, I want some crazy fucked up comic books that I'll enjoy because I'm a 16-year-old girl, or I want some crazy fucked up records that I'll enjoy because I'm 16 and I'm in high school and everybody hates me. And sadly,
hates
I didn't.
Me anyway, they may bring it on.
And I sadly did not get to that stage until I was in college for the punk rock and after college for the comics. So,
well, I mean, I think the important thing is that you get there. I mean,
exactly.
Like, you know, I started getting into that stuff when I was 14 or 15.
Uh-huh.
And then I talked to Mike, and he's like, "Yeah, I've been into that kind of stuff since I was like 9." And I'm like,
"Shut up, jerk."
I mean, you know,
you're so fucking great.
Yeah, he thinks he's so cool.
You think you're more hardcore.
But the other fashion bitch that I had was... so I went to a garage rock show on Saturday.
Okay.
And it was really good. It was... the headlining band was called King Tough there. and then it was another band that both Mike and I like called... the Rantoules.
Okay.
Were kind of like, you know, 60s garage rock kind of stuff. And, like, the music was really good, and it was, like, really fun. It was the Parkside, and I always liked the Parkside. But holy shit, it was basically just a fashion show with, like, bands who happened to be there. And, like, there were so many, like, Mike totally overheard some people, because there's, the Parkside is a bar where there's an inside portion, which is where the stage is and everything, and then there's kind of, like, a large covered patio out back. And like they're about equal size, so we were out in the patio, like while the bands were like changing or whatever, and Mike totally overheard like a group of people saying, like, are you going to go in and listen to any of the bands? And, like, one of them being like, no, I'm just going to hang out out here. But, like, they totally paid the cover price. Like, you know, it was, like, $12 or something.
So they paid
to be seen. Yeah, so they could go and, like, hang out and be seen or whatever. And, like, all these people were just wearing, like, crazy, like, just really elaborate kind of, like, outfits and everything. Yeah. And I was just wearing...
Yeah.
Whatever, and I felt so underdressed and like just.
But you know, I mean, I can say from having tried to imitate these girls, the fashion girls, is that they're probably looking at you and going, God, she's so effortless. How does she do it?
I doubt that.
All she does is just put on a t-shirt and go to the show. Why didn't I do that?
Yes, please.
Hell yeah.
yes, please. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think, I have many gifts. I'm a lucky woman. But fashion and dressing myself is not one of them.
I think you cut yourself short on that. I think you look fine.
Thank you. I mean,
as long as you're not showing up in clothes you bought from, like, Walgreens or the grocery store, I think you're doing okay.
Well, I showed up to yoga class with clothes that I bought at Walgreens.
That was not your fault. That was hilarious, though.
Oh, my God. Should I tell my Walgreens yoga story?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
It's kind of funny. So Eric and I go to yoga class together.
I know, which a year ago you could have said that to me and knocked me down with a feather.
I know.
And now I'm like, and the other day Allegra, the teacher, she said to me, so you've taken yoga classes before, yeah? And I'm like, no. So
good for you.
I guess I'm a natural at yoga despite all efforts to the contrary.
Oh man, yoga class is hilarious. We go on Thursday.
Yes.
So last Thursday it was raining. And
oh my God,
it was raining,
it was the worst day ever.
It sucked.
It was officially the worst day of the year
and
in,
like,
San Francisco. It was fucking horrible.
Yeah, it was bad. So I was heading out to work and, like, you know, we go on our lunch hour.
Yeah.
So normally I just bring my yoga pants or whatever in my bag with everything else. But I forgot them, and I kind of remembered as I was waiting for my bus, and I was like, fuck, I'm not going back in this weather. I'll figure out something. So I was like, well, okay, well, I'll go to Walgreens and I'll just buy some leggings or, you know, like, because I always have, like, that Hanes stuff,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
Like in the plastic bags, like, you know, wife beaters and
stuff
like
shorts
that.
And stuff.
Yeah, and I was like, well, they'll have leggings or something like that. So I go and I buy something that I think is leggings because the illustration on the front makes it look like a woman wearing leggings. And when I read the description on the back, because I was careful to read it because I did not want, because I was like, if it says, you know, hosiery or whatever, then I wasn't going to buy it. So I read it and it just said, you know, like something about like coverage or something. So I bought it because I was like, well, this looks like leggings. And so I bought them and we went to yoga class and I changed into them and they, like, were sort of like, they're like a little bit see-through, I could see, like, of a changer, but they weren't that bad. So
yeah.
I was like, whatever. And then, like, as we were doing yoga class, I totally catch a couple glimpses of myself and I'm like, oh yeah, you can see my polka dot underpants. So
at least you had underwear on.
That's true.
That
would have been
a
lot.
True.
That would have been a lot more awkward. And I like afterwards, I was like, I didn't know if I should, like, apologize and just kind of be like, hey, I'm really sorry. Like, I totally know that that's not appropriate. I just forgot my stuff and it was raining.
I think you're way too considerate. I think you were fine. And trust me, in yoga, nobody's looking at you. They're all, like, trying not to die.
That's my experience. It was mostly the instructor, just because, like, you know, like the cross-legged poses and stuff. And I was just like, if she just looked in the wrong way, then she'd just see, like, my.
I'm sure she's seen much worse.
I'm sure she has.
We should ask her sometime. Like, so how many, like, loose balls have you seen?
Oh God! Yeah, our yoga instructor's awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
And vegan.
Yes.
So
high five! Woo! Yep. And her son gives great high fives. And he gets along with Molly really well. And Molly gets along really well with him.
Oh,
I'm so proud of her.
I didn't see them together, but
yeah, they get along like a house on fire. I think she likes him because he's the same height as her.
Right.
And he's therefore not intimidating.
Right. Yeah, he's a cute kid. He likes animals too.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. And he blows kisses, which is very nice.
That is nice.
It's a skill every, you know, 16-month-old man should know.
Yeah.
To seduce the ladies.
I think so.
But yes, so there's that's my embarrassing yoga story. And it's funny, like, that yoga class is so funny because I'm like, I'm a very, very unflexible person.
Uh-huh.
Very unflexible.
Although I have to give you kudos last week because you got into crane and I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I had no idea where that even came from. I've never done that before.
Own it. Own it, girl.
Yeah. It was the pants.
Yes.
But, so, I mean, but now I'm, like, I'm at a place where I feel really strong.
Yeah.
But, so, like, I can, you know, like, when we do plank, I'm like, yeah. And every time we, like, you know, you do the plank pose, which is basically, like, the up portion of a push-up.
Yeah.
And then you go down and you do a vinyasa, and you're supposed to, you know, very slowly lower yourself down onto
right.
your belly using the strength of your arms. And I'm just like, every time I do that, I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm so strong. And then I'm like, wait, that's not what you're supposed to be thinking about. So it's just very, like, if you could like turn on a speaker and hear what I was thinking in yoga
yeah.
class, it would probably be very amusing because it's just like, fuck yeah, like, and then it's like, wait, no, calm,
yes,
breathe, like,
focus
breathe
on
into
nothingness,
and then we'll
yeah,
do,
I'm awesome,
and then we'll do something like a hamstring stretch, and I'll just kind of be like, oh god, oh god.
And that's where I'm going, yeah, I'm awesome!
Yeah.
See, together, the two of us combined make one perfect yogi.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. And
that
it's
includes
funny.
The sage wisdom,
right,
by the way.
Right. And the funny thing is that, like, you know, I'm a petite person. And, you know, I've been told, you know, that I look like, you know, like I have the build for like a dancer or like
uh-huh.
something like that. And so I look apparently like I should be flexible and
yeah.
lithe and whatever. And I'm just like not at all. You get me to touch my toes and I can touch my knees. That's about it. Mike thought I was joking the very first time that... Because he's really flexible. This is his theory. It's like Mike is like, you know, big... burly
yeah.
dude, and he could like touch his toes and like he's super flexible.
Yeah,
and it drives me crazy. And I, one day he was like stretching, and I was like, oh, I'm so jealous of that. And he was like, well, you know, come on, really, you can't be that bad. I was like, no, really, I really am. He's like, okay, let's see, like bend over and like touch your toes.
Uh huh.
And so I did, and he was like, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, start anytime
yeah.
you like.
And I was like, no, I am. And he was like, no, you're... He's like, no, seriously, come on, like, go. And he refused to believe that that was as far as I could go.
Aww, sad.
It's all right. I mean, you know, I think it's fun to poke fun at myself. I mean, I'm very lucky in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I am
true.
I am very gifted and whatever. So that's... I'm okay with... not being flexible.
That's good. That's good. You've come to terms with it and accepted it.
It used to be really embarrassing when, you know, I haven't done yoga recently, but in my lifetime, I've probably done 5 years of yoga classes.
Yeah.
And I used to take them with my mom.
Oh, okay.
And we used to go to the Unitarian Church just down the street from my childhood home. It's like when I'd be home on break from university.
Where they filmed Santa's sleigh.
This
correct?
Was right down the street, yes.
Okay, good, good.
So we'd go to the Unitarian Church for yoga class, and the class would be like 20, 60-year-old women
uh-huh.
and me. And I was like always by far the least flexible person in the class. It was hilarious. It was really funny. But my mom would always just kind of be like, well, you tried.
That's cute.
Thanks, Mom.
I think I would like to give a shout out to my new favorite podcast. Have
okay.
you listened to it yet?
I still haven't.
Oh my god.
I keep forgetting to put it on my phone, so I keep like being stuck out without it.
My new favorite podcast is How Did This Get Made with Paul Scheer and Jude Diane Raphael. And I'm sorry, I forget the third dude's name because I don't watch The League and he hasn't been in anything else I've seen. But it's fucking hilarious, and it's about, like, the best, worst movies, which is what we're into, right?
Yeah.
Um, Let's see, I think there have been 6 episodes so far. They've talked about classics, such as, they've done 2 Nick Cage movies and 2 John Travolta movies already. So you know they're off to a good, you know they know their stuff.
Yeah.
So they've done, let's see, they've done Season of the Witch and Drive Angry, which totally makes me want to see Drive Angry now. And I'm really bummed we missed it in 3D.
But we really need to have like a Blu-ray party.
We'll totally have a Blu-ray party. And
we'll force Colin to fly out here.
Totally. They've done Old Dogs, the great Disney Robin Williams, John Travolta.
Which I'm pretty sure is available on Netflix Instant.
It is indeed available on Netflix Instant. And wow, that sounds like a steaming pile of shit. Because,
that
you
sounds
know,
kind of amazing.
Jokes where men get raped by either a prison inmate or an animal are hysterical. No matter what.
They are.
And the other John Travolta movie was Battlefield Earth.
Right.
Which
filmed
is very
at
funny.
My alma mater.
Oh, was
McGill
it?
University.
I know they mentioned it was filmed in Canada. I didn't know it was at your
filmed
your
at
school.
My university.
That is so funny. And then they did, the first episode was on Burlesque, the Cher, Christina Aguilera, and sadly, Kristen Bell movie.
Oh.
And that sounds hilarious. And I forget what the last one was about. Oh, Avatar, The Last Airbender. The famously bad M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Right.
So anyway, it's a hysterical podcast. They basically explore, like, they go through the movie methodically from start to finish and talk about all the ways in which it is horrible. And I enjoy it immensely. And it actually led to, I got my partner into it. And naturally it led to him watching. Over the weekend, I woke up to what I thought was, oh God, whose voice did I think it was? Anyway, I thought it was another actor, and it turned out to be Nick Cage. And he was watching Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans on Netflix Instant View. Because in How Did This Get Made, they talk about starting a campaign to take people's Oscars back.
Oh my God.
And they mentioned Nick Cage. They want to take back his Oscar for Season of the Witch. And then they said give it back for Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. A decision with which I take issue.
Right.
And then they said take it away again for Drive Angry. So at the end of the day, Nick Cage still has his Oscar taken away, which I agree with.
Right.
It's just the giving back for Port of Call, New Orleans that I disagree with. But so I started to tell you about how amazing this movie was, not realizing that, of course, you've already seen it.
Right, yes. everything that is on Netflix Instant View that has Nick Cage in it, I have seen.
The movie was kind of amazing.
It's so I'm not entirely clear, so correct me if I say something wrong, but...
Well, I came into it about 20 minutes in, so I may not be able to correct you.
So I didn't realize this until we started watching it and Mike started telling me, but apparently the Bad Lieutenant series is supposed to be something of a franchise, almost. I mean, not quite a franchise, but the original director, who I can't remember who it is, like a great director.
Right.
Directed the original.
Well, I know the original is Harvey Keitel.
Right.
And he was meant to be amazing.
Right. But who directed it?
I forget. I don't know.
But it's like, you know, it's like a great director and like great cast and everything. It was, you know, like a very good movie.
Right.
And then Mike said something about how it was kind of intended to be reinterpreted by different people, different directors, and different casts. And I could be totally off base because I did drink during the movie.
Fair enough.
But
I don't think anybody could be blamed for drinking during a Nick Cage movie.
Right. So Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans was not intended to be a remake. It was more intended to be kind of like a picking up of the franchise.
And it was intended to be an extremely long and verbose movie title with possibly more than one set of colons.
Yes, that's true. I mean, there's so much to discuss with that movie.
Well, I guess the basic gist of the movie is that Nick Cage plays a lieutenant.
Right.
Who,
a police lieutenant, not like an army.
Right, right. And I missed, like I said, I missed the first 20 minutes or so, but it woke me up. So apparently in the first 20 minutes, he saves a guy's life during a prison riot.
Yes.
And then, but injures his back. and it becomes a long-term injury, and he begins to self-medicate. He starts abusing prescription medications, but then gets onto like crack and stuff. And
you know, I think that there's the implication that he might have been doing shit before.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not. But it's not quite clear.
So he becomes a crooked cop.
Yeah,
as I mean, Al Pacino would say.
Basically, he's a crooked cop who did like one good thing in his past.
Right. Right.
You know.
And Eva Mendez plays the hooker with a heart of gold, the prerequisite hooker with a heart of gold,
and
who he falls in love
with.
Holy
shit, I did not think that there was anybody out there who's as bad an actor as Nicolas Cage, but Eva Mendez apparently is. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Her performance was just stunning. Like, so, like, terribly, terribly bad. And it's really not that difficult, I wouldn't think, to turn in, like, a half-assed, like, hooker with a heart of gold. Like, really all you have to do is kind of be like, baby, I love you, love you. Like, that's it.
I'll look after your daddy's dog for you, sure, baby.
Right, yeah. But, like, she was the most, like, wooden, just terrible. She was awful. And the worst, the worst slash best thing is that, like, it's this ludicrous movie.
Uh-huh.
With this, like, tired premise of, like, you know, the bad cop.
Yeah.
But they tried to portray it like it was produced as if it was this very serious, very gritty, compelling,
weighty
movie.
It will shock
movie.
People when they see it.
Yeah.
They'll never know that, you know, they'll be shocked that cops act this way. So I had three major surprises during the film.
Okay.
Above and beyond the kind of quality I was expecting. The first surprise was that Jennifer Coolidge was in that movie.
Right.
Because she is amazing.
She was amazing
in that movie.
Yeah.
But she was clearly too good for that movie.
Yeah.
So Jennifer Coolidge, my hat goes off to you, but girl, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
The second major surprise was about, I don't know if you noticed this, but about halfway through the movie, Nick Cage's voice becomes a parody of itself. Like, the first half of the movie, you know,
meta acting.
Yeah, I don't know what he did, but, like, it was seriously like somebody flipped a switch and he went from, like, hey, I'm Nick Cage, to, like, hey, I'm Nick Cage. It was just so ridiculous and, like, it was like he put a second nose on top of his real nose so his voice would get even more nasal and more ridiculous. And it stayed like that for the rest of the movie. I was like, what are you doing with your voice, Nick Cage? It didn't start like that. And then the third and greatest, arguably greatest surprise was the appearance, the unannounced arrival of Reptile Cam.
Right.
And I'm probably screwing this up because I'm not a biologist, and I have no idea if both gators and iguanas, or either, are reptiles, or I guess gators are amphibians, but I don't fucking know.
I think they're reptiles.
I'm a podcaster, not a biologist. There's a scene where there's a scene from the point of view of a crocodile, which is sort of, you know, sort of the intro to the reptilian cam, but you don't see the crocodile again. But I think the main character for reptilian cam is the iguanas.
Right.
There's a complete non sequitur scene about probably, like, I don't know, what would you say, a third of the way into the movie, maybe halfway into the movie, maybe that's what makes it mix. Cage's voice change. He sees that iguana and
it just
he flips
changes his
shit.
Life.
Changes his voice. Nick Cage is high on drugs and he's hallucinating iguanas that nobody else in the room sees. And so, you know, explainable enough, he's the bad lieutenant, he's been high on his own supply, you know, he sees iguanas. And then, inexplicably, they cut to, like, it's kind of like a little camcorder, you know, it looks a little rougher, more handheld, and it's, like, right in the iguana's face, and they're playing this, like, blues song, like, baby, I love you, and it's so stupid, and it's this whole song, and they're just zooming in on the iguana, and, like, Val Kilmer, whoever ate Val Kilmer, sorry, it had to be said, the guy who ate Val Kilmer and Nick Cage are kind of in the background, but they're really clearly not central to the action. Clearly the focus is on the iguanas for a full 2 minutes.
Right.
And then it just goes back to the action with no explanation whatsoever as to why the iguanas merited their own camera, why the iguanas merited their own song, or why the iguanas merited 3 minutes of this movie. And then... Oh, yeah, and then at some point later in the movie, you know, they shoot some guy, and his soul continues to breakdance next to his body. So his body is lying on the ground, while his soul, who is basically his body in the same outfit, does, like, a breakdancing head spin for, like, 2 minutes until they shoot the body again, and then the soul falls on the ground.
Which is really the only way to kill a soul.
At which point... one of the iguanas walks by the dead soul's body.
Yeah.
So they bring it back to the iguana, but they never bring it back to the crocodile.
Yeah.
And none of this is explained beyond, you know, Nick Cage is crazy and he's having, like, cocaine hallucinations.
See, you know, if this were a comedy, it would be fucking crazy funny.
Yeah.
Like, if that had been a comedy movie, it would be hilarious. It would be, like, amazing, like, profound, transcendent comedy. But, no, it's not intentional. So it is really funny, but it's not, you know.
And Exhibit was in it. That also surprised me.
Oh, I would.
I was like, is that Exhibit? He's the guy that used to be on Pimp My Ride. His trademark is, like, yo, dog, I heard you like blank, so we blanked your car with blank, blank, blank. But it's always, yo, dog, I heard you like... Yo, dog, I heard you like movies, so we put a widescreen TV in the back of your car. Yo, dog, I heard you like bubbles, so we put a bubble machine in your glove compartment.
I should totally submit Mike's van to that.
Sadly, I think it's off the air now.
Damn it.
But you should. You should have back in the past before he bought it and before you were together.
I should have.
You should have.
You're right.
Shame on you.
Yes.
You should have had more foresight. But continuing this this vein of media that we've been talking about, I also watched another great film on Instant View this weekend, which I think you'll be delighted to hear about.
Okay.
True Believer, based very, 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 very loosely on our boss, Tony
Sarah. I have not seen it yet. I keep meaning to put it on.
It's funny because I remember it being recommended to me for some reason on Netflix Instant, probably because I just watched some courtroom drama, and they're like, you might like True Believer. And I was like, I don't know. And then later on, I was like, I'm going to look up this movie that's supposed to be based on Tony's life. And it came up, and I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this movie.
Yeah.
So I watched it, and hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Did you see any, did you, like, recognize any Tony-isms in the movie?
Aside from the ponytail and the weed smoking, no. And I think, seriously, like, that's as far as they base the character on him.
Yeah.
It's James Wood that plays the Tony character. And there was this hilarious opening scene, which is, you know, pretty well-trod territory by now. But in the beginning, a fresh-faced and idealistic Robert Downey Jr., who's fresh out of law school, takes a taxi to the courtroom in New York. That's another thing I was really disappointed about, was that it wasn't based in San Francisco. No! How fucked up is that? Anyway. So he takes a cab straight from the train station or the airport to the courtroom, and he tells the clerk at the court when he's checking in, he's like, I'm going to see the Edward Dodd, and or Dodd or whatever, I don't know what his character's name is. So he goes to the courtroom and he sits in the gallery, is that what it's called, the gallery? In the audience.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really a name for it.
So he sits in the first row behind the defense table, and he hilariously mistakes the defendant for the lawyer and the lawyer for the defendant because it's a cocaine charge. So the defendant is like this well-dressed Wall Street businessman. And then James Woods as, you know, Tony Sarah in quotes is this guy with he's got a really bad like fake wig ponytail. So he, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s character automatically assumes the guy with the ponytail is the defendant.
Right.
Even though, don't the lawyer and the defendant usually sit in the same seat, like from court to court?
Usually, though I don't know if there's necessarily a...
Okay. So it could have been an honest mistake.
Yeah, I mean,
for
especially the sake of, you know, if you're a law student, you don't necessarily know anything about anything at all.
True.
I can tell you, having been one.
Right.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. doesn't know shit about the law. So anyway, he sits down and he taps James Wood on the shoulder, and he says, "You're in great hands with this guy." At which point the judge says, "Counsel, would you like to make a closing argument?" And James Wood says, "Yes, Your Honor, I would." And Robert Downey Jr.'s mind is blown. And so anyway, it's a completely forgettable movie about like a retrial for a Chinatown murder case in which this poor young, you know, first generation Korean American kid gets framed for a murder he didn't commit and yada yada yada. And then it turns out the DA is involved. Spoiler alert, oh no, and the DA is Red Foreman from that 70s show.
Nice.
And the other memorable moment of the movie, the one that made me groan out loud and kind of roll my eyes, because this is very much like you take everything that Our Boss is about and put it in a blender and condense it and then maybe add like a few pounds of shit and this is what you get. There's a scene where, you know, initially he doesn't want to take the Korean kid's case, and then Robert Downey Jr. shames him. And he's like, "Man, you used to be a radical. You used to be cool. Now all you do is defend drug dealers." And so there's this horrible slash great scene where James Woods is in his office and he's looking at all the newspaper clippings of all his radical activities in the 60s, and all along the Watchtower is playing in the background while he smokes a joint. He's like, "Man, maybe I should take this Korean kid's case." And that's just the best worst thing ever in the whole movie.
Oh my god.
So yeah, it was a piece of shit. I highly recommend it, especially if you are familiar with Our Boss.
Yeah,
or
so I
work
like
with him
to.
On a daily basis like we do.
I've been meaning to see it, and then I don't know, for whatever reason, whenever I have the time, the idea just never pops into my head, you know?
It's a little disappointing how very little it was based on his life.
Well, though, I mean, happily, I can highly recommend the book that was recently written.
I am looking forward to the book.
I'm about halfway through.
Cool.
And it's fascinating, and I actually really enjoy it. Like, it's... It was the woman who wrote it was actually a courtroom artist.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Yeah, and she, I wasn't sure what to expect about like the writing style and everything else. It's very good. I think it's really well done. There's a documentary being made about Tony.
Oh, nice. I remember them coming into film. So
yeah, I think they're trying to secure the rest of their funding, but we could actually. There is a preview on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
Which is hilarious.
I should share my favorite Tony quote with the podcast.
Yeah, you should.
This is from last week at some point. I forget which day, but I like to pull random Tony quotes because generally, you know, I mean, he's a bit older now, so I think he tends to be like pretty quiet. I don't know how loud he was in his younger days, but he's a little quiet and, you know, he's like in his 70s, so, you know. He's a bit of a quieter old man, but then once in a while he'll just burst out with something, like shouting. And last week it was, "This isn't about patriotism, this is about fuck America!" And I was like, "God damn, I love my office."
Was he talking about the desecrated American flag?
He was talking about the desecrated American flag, which somebody had folded up very nicely in a military triangle.
Yeah.
And he was very upset about that.
Well... Shall we bid adieu to our listeners and watch the preview, the like selected scenes from the documentary?
We should, and then you should record an addendum about "fuck you" because I'm legal now.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.